go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to the next episode of Deep Space High, a podcast where we break down the latest and maybe not so greatest from today's sci-fi TV. I'm Jedi Master Steven.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
Chris, how the hell are you doing this weekend?
I'm tired. It's been a long weekend.
Yeah, 4th of July weekend, so I'm sure a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, mostly just, well, smoking a lot of weed and drinking a lot of alcohol and enjoying the fireworks.
Well, that sounds fun.
Yeah, we're not doing that, just fucking school, man. I hate summer school.
Yeah, it's the worst.
What about you? What'd you guys end up doing for this, for 4th of July weekend?
We went out to the lake. I say we, my girlfriend and I, we went out to her parents, watched some fireworks, went out onto the lake. We went onto the lake to watch fireworks. That was cool.
I saw from your girlfriend's Facebook page, y'all shot some guns.
Yeah, we did shoot some guns. That was fun. That was awful. First time I think I've shot in 8 or 9 months. And I took a new gun that I have never shot before, and then one that I was really bad at. Just trying to figure that out. Couldn't do that so well.
Now, did you take any of your guns, or were they all their guns?
No, I took two of mine. I took one that I bought just after the new year that I haven't gotten a shot yet. And then my first one that I've had, and that I don't shoot very well. So,
first one is that?
Yeah, my first handgun.
I'm trying to think of which one that was. Was that the 380?
No, it's 9mm. They're both 9mm.
Oh, okay.
So, shot that, and I always shoot that one low to the left, and I don't know why, and I still don't know why. So, I'm gonna have to go to the range and practice, and maybe see an instructor. Maybe there's something.
Is it just with the one gun, or is it all your, shooting with the pistol that you're low left?
Both of those were low left, but not all my pistols shoot low left.
Because, isn't it supposed to be based off of your finger position on where it is on the trigger, that if you're low left, then you have it, you're, over-gripping the trigger, and you're kind of pushing it, and that's why it goes to the left, and then if it's going to the right, you're kind of pulling it or jerking it?
And that's what I did. I think I had too much finger on it at first, so I took some finger off of it, which sounds really dirty.
A little bit.
sounds really dirty, but I took some finger off of it, and then I was just kind of missing a little less low left and a little more just low to the 6 o'clock position. But
yeah,
when the gun went bang, my sights were lined up perfectly, and I had the right amount of space to it, so I should have been bullseye in it.
Well, we can't anticipate being gunslingers like, the Mandalorian, since that's who we're getting into today.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it!
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it!
I'm gonna go do it!
So, Steve, you want to kind of start getting us into that breakdown of, we're finally getting into the Mandalorian? I love it.
Yes. Yeah, today we're going over Season 1, Episode 1 of The Mandalorian, entitled The Mandalorian. We're doing things a little differently here than we did with Picard. We're going to try to do less of the scene-by-scene jumping and a little more of the brief overview of the scene, and then we'll kind of get into some talking points about the scene and then move on to the next scene. I know that doesn't sound much different, but in our heads, it seems different when we were planning this episode and the next 8 for The Mandalorian. So
yeah,
just want to throw that out there. There will be a little difference. We're going to try to keep it less minute and less, less breakdown style and more conversation-based.
Right.
Hopefully. Who knows? It might turn out the same for all we know.
Probably will, knowing us. It never comes out like we think it's going to.
Yeah.
As it does.
We'll jump into the first scene. And what we're going to classify as the first scene is from the opening moment, the second he steps off onto the ice and is walking towards the cantina, to the moment that he is kind of off that planet or it jumps to a new planet. just to kind of not spoil the next 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
Pretty much the first 10 minutes, that's what we're going to be talking about. First 10 minutes of the episodes. So,
pretty much. So, opening scene, I mean, right off the bat, you get some great, great visuals where he's walking away from either a ship or a speeder into an ice-type planet like Hoth, for example. Mm-hmm. I don't think it is Hoth, but
no.
For reference purposes, it's a nice climate with a small little village, and he walks into a cantina there. From there, you get, you know, he's obviously his bounty is there, and we met him. It's the blue-looking guy. He's getting picked on by some three other people for, you know, obviously inebriated off their ass, and Mando walks in. Those three guys now start picking on Mando. They're like, he spilled my drink. I was like, that drink was spilled 10 minutes before Mando even walked in.
Yeah, I know, right? I was going to say, like, how the fuck did he even spill your drink, man? Like, what did he do? He just walked in the door.
And the drink was already spilled.
Yeah.
Like, a good 10 seconds before he even walked in. Makes no sense. But when you're drunk, nothing makes sense. Or everything makes sense. One way or the other.
I think it's both.
Yeah, it's both. It makes no sense in all the sense all together at the same time.
Yes. That's the definition of drunk.
Yeah. But from there, a fight ensues, and then you see your first taste of action where Mando is, he can kick some ass in some hand-to-hand combat.
Yes, he can. That's one way to scare the shit out of your bounty.
Right? Right. Not only that, one of the guys, the guy with the tendrils or the tentacles, tries to run out, and he's... And I'm only using this reference because I was watching this with my girlfriend, and she was like, did she just Spider-Man him? Or did Mandalorian just Spider-Man him? I was like, he kind of did. He shot around his ankles and started pulling him back, and then, of course, shot the door and cut the guy in half.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping to get a little more gore, but knowing it's on Disney Plus, you can't expect too much.
Yeah, that's fair. But the makeup looked pretty good. Was that makeup for the... for the aliens, or did they do CGI for that?
As far as I know, it's mostly practical effects.
I was going to say, because that looked really good.
I think they made a mask and threw it on.
Okay. And it wasn't a long scene, so I'm sure they only had to do it for like 1 or 2 days. I mean, it was only a 10-minute scene.
And I think, because after the guy, the tentacle guy, gets cut in half, Mando picks up his bounty, which was the blue guy they were picking up on, you know, takes him into custody, and then starts to take him back to his ship, which he calls for after they leave the bar. I guess there's a guy just standing in the middle of nowhere who just all his, it's the speeder valet. Oh, you need a ride?
Yeah, plays his little flute. Here comes a speeder with the droid on it, and he's like, fuck the droid.
Nice little R2 unit, brand new speeder. And he's like, you don't want this? Here, I'll flip you a coin so I can get a shittier craft. Okay.
No droids.
Here comes a bearded dude with a broken down speeder.
One of the interesting things, going back to the bar scene, I'm going to call him the dickhead, and I'm referring to the guy who spilt his beard and was giving Mando a hard time. One of the questions that he asked was, is that real Beskar? Now, for the people who don't really know what Beskar is, what do you know what he was referring to or what he was talking about? And he was pointing at his armor, so I'm going to assume it has something to do with his armor.
Yeah, and Beskar is a Mandalorian metal from, you know, the planet Mandalore, which they mined and put into their armor. It is supposedly the strongest metal in the galaxy. And as you'll see, I think later in the episode, it deflects blaster bolts, which if anyone remembers old stormtroopers from the original trilogy, you know, their armor can't do that.
Right.
So this Beskar is the lightest and strongest metal in the universe that I know of. And it originates from their home world. They mined it. They use it in just about anything. So it's in their armor, their helmet, their chest plating, shoulder plating, and it's a very valuable metal because it is so lightweight and because it is so strong. Deflects, like I said, blaster bolts, and it's even been, legend has it that it can stop a lightsaber. I don't know if you go if you thrust through if it'll stop it, but I know it'll take glancing blows and kind of sideward swipes. It'll stop a lightsaber.
Now, is it supposed to be the same? Like, I'm going to get a little off track into the video games. They have something like a Vibro Blade or something like that. To where they can use it against lightsabers. Is that supposed to be like the same metal or material, or is that something else?
That's a good question. I don't know off the top of my head.
I was playing Knights of the Old Republic recently, so that's why I bring it up.
Oh, I don't know if it's made of the same material. Vibroblade might just be made of something similar or a strong enough metal to deflect, you know, to use against the lightsaber, but I don't know. I don't know if you could use it to the same deflecting ability of phaser blasts or blaster shots and everything like that.
No, I don't know. But okay, so it's a Mandalorian steel, essentially.
Yeah, and it's very, like I said, it's like the vibranium of the Star Wars universe. It could pretty much stop anything.
Interesting. Very interesting.
But continuing in that first scene, after they get transported back to Mando's ship, which is called the Razor Crest, this, I guess, ice monster that lives below the planet surface for the most part comes up. And in my opinion, it was like a space crocodile hippopotamus.
Like a giant one.
Yeah, a giant hippopotamus crocodile starts to eat at or bite at the ship a little bit to prevent them from taking off. And you see how powerful that weapon, because you see that the Mandalorian has this rifle like weapon attached to him.
Very long.
And one of its settings apparently is very powerful taser.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be freaking powerful, because that thing was probably like 90 to 100 feet long.
Yeah, several tons. So, and it did enough to get him off a ship. And I like this, because now on the ship, you're kind of seeing the personality of the bounty, the guy that was captured, and he's trying to figure a way off the ship, but they start talking about evacuating, which is, I guess, Star Wars shitting.
Right. Yeah, that was weird. I don't know his species, but he was saying something like they only do it once every solstice.
Yeah, so what is that? Once a solstice, if there's, you know, two solstices in a year, talking Earth terms, so they go at once every 6 months?
Yeah, that's a... Shit, imagine holding it for 6 months.
Sometimes I wish I could only go 6 months. I go...
Yeah, you go five times a day.
Never know how much one's going to go a day, and, you know, this guy's shitting once every 6 months. That's the life.
Yeah, right.
But, but yeah, that's the first time. But he talk. They call it a vac tube, so the Razor Crest ship has a, I guess in all ships it's called a vac tube, is the toilet.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, they never really talk about that.
Yeah, that's the first I've known. I mean, they might have brought it up somewhere in the animated shows, but I've, you know, seen Clone Wars two or three times and Rebels once and Resistance Zero, so I'm not sure if they really ever bring it up there, but that's the first time you see a toilet in Star Wars. At least in a live action. And it's got a pretty steep angle, too. It looks like it's at a good 30-degree angle that you got to sit down on and shit.
So, well,
interesting way to drop a deuce.
Yeah, I guess so. Only you would find that interesting, Steven.
when you spend your day as much as your day on the toilet as I do, you kind of see that things like that in a different light. So,
That's funny. Well, yeah. I don't know, because he was kind of walking around looking on the ship. It seemed like he was using that as an excuse to find a way out, and he starts pushing buttons on a panel, and he opens a door to a bunch of guns, and then he just closes it and keeps looking around. Like, why the fuck would you not grab a gun if you're trying to figure out a way to escape?
Yeah, and maybe it wasn't he was trying to find a way to escape, but just being nosy as shit.
Yeah.
And because the guy doesn't seem very violent, he doesn't seem like he's gonna get back at you, so it might have just been, oh, what's this dude? Oh, guns, okay, that's good to know, I guess.
Yeah, and, I mean, he seemed pretty chill, so.
And then he stumbles across, it's like three or four different people frozen in carbonite,
which I found weird, because I mean, I guess carbonite's a common thing for bounty hunters. I didn't know that was a common thing.
It might not be a common thing, it might have been, you know, kind of news got out once Han was frozen in carbonite in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, but where are we time-wise, though, with this show?
Oh, this is 5 years after Return of the Jedi, so this is after, definitely after Empire Strikes Back.
Is it? I thought this was in between.
No, this is after Jedi.
I did not know that. I thought this was after Revenge of the Sith, but before Rogue One.
No. No, we'll get into that more in when we talk about the next scene in the next segment of the show. But apparently Mando has a carbonite machine on his thing, and he's like, I'm sick of this guy. So he freezes him in carbonite, and then that's kind of the end of the first 10 minutes, and where it leads into the next part of the episode. So, yeah, apparently the Razor Crest is outfitted with those kind of tools.
Yeah, I mean, it's efficient if you're going to be a bounty hunter. So
yeah, and one thing to keep talking about the Razor Crest, the guy, the bounty before he was frozen in carbonite, he was saying how the ship is a classic. It was pre-Empire, and I noticed when watching the episode, you know, a lot of the ships in the Star Wars universe, they take off, it seems like, using an anti-gravity device. But this one, so if you look on the underside of the Razor's Crest engines, you'll see it'll kind of open a port and some thrusters will start coming down. So it'll kind of direct the flow of the engine instead of back. So to propel the ship forwards, it throws it down, so it'll lift the ship up.
Oh, kinda okay.
Kind of like modern aircraft technology with like the Harrier or something like that, where it'll kind of, so that way it can do vertical takeoffs and landings.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't notice that actually.
Yeah, and it's one of those, when we first watched it way back in 2019, I didn't notice that, but rewatching it for our podcast, I did notice that it did have those takeoff and vertical landings were not anti-gravity, they were based off of thrusters.
Okay, that's that is interesting. I actually did not notice that.
Yeah, I guess that's something where the aircraft geek in me kind of noticed that, because I noticed, you know, watching Star Wars, you always notice that there's nothing like that. You just assume it's anti-gravity devices.
Which would make sense in what you were saying. If this was pre-Empire style of ship, it may be an older means of propulsion, kind of like how 1970s cars had carburetors and we don't have carburetors anymore.
No, now it's fuel injection or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. Well, now it's fucking Tesla and we're just getting electric engines. But
true. Yeah. But let's talk about the next part of the episode, which we'll call like scene two.
Mm-hmm.
When he takes the bounty back to this new planet, and I guess it's where they're based. It's where the Bounty Hunters Guild, which you find a little bit more out in a minute, it's where they're based. So Mando walks into another cantina, and it's like, man, this guy's just going from bar to bar. I like it. But
yeah,
I mean,
right.
He's there to work, not to drink and socialize. So
yes, well, I mean, he meets up with Apollo Creed. What's his name? Carl Weathers.
Yep. Yes, and his character's name is Greef Karga.
Yes, I like Apollo Creed better, but we'll call him Greef Karga. That is the actor who played Apollo Creed, right?
Yep.
Okay, so. Just making sure. Pretty I mean, sure. I was gonna say, because when I watched it, I'm like, it's Apollo. He's not dead after all.
No, but yeah, and to talk about Mandalorian sits down with Creed. Oh, damn, now I'm going to do
that. You did it too. It's all right.
Now he sits down with the head of the Bounty Hunters Guild, which is Greef Karga, and there's an interaction there where, you know, Mando had four different bounties, and you're kind of getting the impression that this Mando is one of the better bounty hunters in the guild, because he's like, that's quick, you're done already. And then they're talking price, and Karga tries to pay him with Imperial credits, and that's when Mando's like,
these are Imperial credits.
They still spend.
I don't know if you heard, but the Empire is gone.
Fine, now. I can do calamari flan, but I can only pay half.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember that. And then he pays him in something else.
Yes, oh. And that's another talking point I wanted to bring up. He pays him in calamari flan. Does that ring any bells?
Calamari flan. I mean, I remember him paying him in that, but he only paid him like half. But I don't remember calamari flan.
So Mon Calamari is a planet that it's where Admiral Ackbar is from.
Oh, okay. I was going to say it sounded familiar.
Yep. And for those of you who don't know Admiral Ackbar, it's the guy who says, it's a trap! In the original trilogy.
That's pretty much all he's known for.
Yeah. But, you know, that ship was very responsible, or that planet, Mon Calamari, was very responsible for ship designing for the Rebellion. So there was some, not all, but a good portion of their ships did come from or were designed on Mon Calamari. So the Calamari Flan, which looks like Jell-O coins.
Yeah, they really did.
And, you know, so that's what he was paid in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was interesting because, you know, they're talking about the guild, and I'm assuming the guild is the name of this bounty hunter organization. And they were, in order to get their bounties, they have something called pucks, apparently, where it's like they have the list of the bounties, they have the trackers, where they can find them, or, yeah, you know, information in, to make it easier to find them. And he was talking about how all these bounties were too easy for him, and they wanted something better. And they were talking about an underworld. So I'm curious, you know, are pucks, like these pucks, like legal forms of bounty? You know, is the guild an actual legal organization, or is it just an organization? You know, because they were talking about kind of an underworld deal with this other bounty that they wanted to do.
Yeah, well, okay. I don't think the name of the Bounty Hunter Guild is actually the Bounty Hunter Guild. I think later in the episode we'll kind of see it's named something else, but I can't remember off the top of my head at the moment. So it is an organization that, say, if someone, say you want to put a bounty out for someone because they skipped a bail, which is mentioned in the episode, you contact one of these guilds and you put out a bounty for said person for said amount of money. And then all that information is put into a puck officially, and then that's given to the bounty hunter to kind of, you know, them taking the job to go find this person. And then the fob, which is the tracker to track the, you know, the bounty. I'm not really sure how that works. It seems like it only works once you're on the same planet as the bounty. What was your other question?
Underworld.
Oh, the underworld. So the underworld, from what I know, it's just like the illegal activity of the Star Wars universe. So organized crime, black market, all that fun stuff, is that's the underworld.
Now, what was the criminal, what was the name of the criminal syndicate in Solo? Do you remember?
Something Dawn.
Crimson Dawn?
Crimson Dawn. Yeah, they're part of the underworld. So it'd be like, you know, the mob bosses. So,
and then the Hutts?
Yeah, the Hutts are part of it because of their illegal activity.
So, okay, so I guess the point where I was trying to get to is, would the guild kind of be classified as that illegal organization? But from the way that you're saying it, seems like, no, that they're more of a legitimate means of conducting bounties, but there is an underworld.
Yeah, it's one of those, and as you brought up, that Mando's not satisfied with any of the bounties that is the guild currently has open right now. So he's given information to go to meet someone about this new bounty, or this, you know, high priority bounty or whatever, that doesn't, it doesn't have a puck, and it only has a tracking fob. So it's just one of those things where it seems like it's under the table work for the bounty hunters, or like an off the record thing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what they talked, that's even what they talked about for the scene. Was they, all the information that they could even give him on this underground bounty was his age, or the bounty's age, and all we got was it's 50 years old.
Yeah, 50 years old. They're like, there's no puck. We have a tracking fob, but we only have the last four digits of the something code, confirmation, I don't know, some code. And they're like, he's like, that's it? That's all you got? And he's like, yeah, but here's what we're going to pay you in. Boom. Slaps a little thing of Beskar down as a down payment. And he's like, I have a whole container full of this. This is your down payment. Bring my bounty back alive. And I'll reduce the payment if you just so happen to, you know, bring them back dead and can confirm you're the one that did it.
Well, yeah. And we should also point out that the fact that these were former Imperial, I don't want to say troopers, but they used to be part of the Empire. Well, there were stormtroopers, and then I don't think the guy who was doing the bounty was a stormtrooper. He was more like a former Imperial officer or something like that.
Yeah, he had some other doings with the Empire, but you know, you definitely saw stormtroopers. You had the actor's name is Werner Herzog, so his character has something to do with the Empire, and then you have that Dr. Pershings, who came out, and he was in Imperial attire, so you know he has something to do with the Empire. And then there was kind of a misunderstanding, or not a misunderstanding, but you know,
conflicting perspectives on what they want them to do with the bounty.
Yeah, because the doctor wants it alive. Like, no, there's no killing it. Like, it has to be alive. And, you know, obviously, Herzog's character is okay, which he remains unnamed during this episode.
Right.
But he's like, it's okay if he comes back dead. You're just not getting paid all this Baskar that I promised you.
I mean, I think that's part of two reasons. One, he has an ulterior motive. And two, he probably just doesn't want to give up that much Baskar if it's as valuable as, you know, you were making it out to be.
Yeah. And, you know, from there, they kind of have a, it's like a handshake agreement because there's no puck, so there's no official agreement. So it's one of those. Mando goes off with his deposit. He meets, I guess there's a hideout of other Mandalorians on this planet too. So he goes down there. You see a couple other Mandalorians. The audience meets the armorer. So he kind of gives the calamari flan that he just earned from his other bounties and has the armorer craft a new shoulder plate out of Baskar for him. So,
yeah, just from that one little bar.
Yeah, to bring up your point earlier about the opening scene, it doesn't seem like his entire, all of his armor is Baskar. It just seems like the helmet and now this new shoulder piece is.
Right. Well, one of the things that they talked about in that scene was that it was that the Baskar was taken from the Great Purge.
The Great Purge.
Yeah. So what exactly is the Great Purge for those who don't know?
I don't have a lot of information on it. I just know that in between episode 3 and episode 4, when the Empire is at the height of its power, they were able to seize Mandalore and kind of, you know, they were able to steal their minds and take a lot of the Baskar that they were able, you know, that Mandalore had.
Right.
So there's not a lot of information on it. There might be books or comics on it, but from canon, like the movies or any of the animated shows, there's not a lot about the Purge.
Right. Well, they said that the excess Baskar that was not used for the shoulder plate would go to sponsor or help out different fondlings. So I'm like, what's a fondling? Is that supposed to be like a Mandalorian version of a youngling or?
No, the foundlings are, they're like adopted into the culture.
Mm-hmm.
So in this example, we see when the armorer is crafting the image, you see the young version of the Mandalorian where they're obviously in some sort of war, whether it's the Rebels versus Empire or whether it's the Clone Wars has yet to be determined, at least in episode one. To not give too much away, a foundling is pretty much when a Mandalorian discovers a child who is, you know, his parents have either left him or they were killed, and they kind of adopt that child into their culture and clan and raise them as a Mandalorian, even though they weren't born on Mandalore or have Mandalorian blood.
Right. Because, you know, there's a very deep history about Mandalorians that they don't really cover in the episode, but there's a lot of history in books and comic books and even the video games. I know Knights of the Old Republic 2 goes very in-depth about Mandalorian's history, doesn't it?
I never finished 2.
Really?
So I don't know. Yeah, I've only finished KOTAR 1. Never finished KOTAR 2.
KOTAR 2 is pretty good. I mean, it wasn't as good as the first one, but...
It's just one of those I never finished. Let's talk about the last part of this episode.
Okay.
So, last scene we'll talk about, and, you know, it's several scenes, but we'll classify it as one scene, is when the Mandalorian leaves the planet with, you know, his Mandalorian clan and then his Bounty Hunters Guild, and now he's off to the bounty, where the bounty is hiding.
What planet was that on, that to where the guild was at? Do you know, or do you remember?
I have no idea. As far as I know, none of the planets in this episode were named.
Okay. Let's keep an eye on it for an episode 2. Let's see if they mention it next time.
Yeah, I will. I think they do at some point in the season, but as far as I recall, and I've watched this episode twice in preparation for this, it was never named any of the three planets in the scene in this episode. So as far as I know, like, he went somewhere and then now he's on this desert planet, has a run in with some of the local wildlife that nearly kill him. This Ugnaught comes in, neutralizes them, and then kind of takes them in to, what's the word we're looking for when you take a wild animal and want to
domesticate it?
Yeah, Now they're trying to domesticate these blurgs, is what they're called.
Well, it's like they're trying to do the same thing like you would do with the horse when you get a wild horse. It's like breaking. Is it breaking the horse? No, it's.
Yeah, I think it's domesticate the horse.
But he was smart to go for the eye when they was attacking him. I noticed that because when they were attacking him, they had him by the arm in one hand, the other hand. He was just kept going after the eye, hoping to let him go. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty smart. That's what you're supposed to do for sharks. Like if you get attacked by a shark, go for the eye, let him go. Yeah. I'm surprised that that was interesting. Just something that I find interesting. But what was the name of the guy who helped him out that was trying to domesticate him? Do you remember?
As far as I know, it wasn't named. I know he's an Ugnaught.
Is that his
name?
That's
all I know.
Or is that just the name of a species?
No. It's just species.
Man, they really don't like to give names. I guess no. It makes it easier for us since we wouldn't remember their names anyways.
I know at some point his name is revealed. It wasn't in this episode.
Right. Well, I like him because every time he finishes with the sentence, he's like, I have spoken.
Yeah. Before anyone can rebut, no, I have spoken. I'm done. That's it. End of conversation.
That's what I need to do. Just like fuck trying to talk to people. Just be like, I have spoken, and then just walk away.
Yeah. Very popular now that after this series premiered.
But, you know, he keeps Mando keeps getting thrown off of the not Ugnaught. What was it called again?
It's a blur. I was going to say, they take the blurred back to the Ugnaught's, I guess, farm.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying, and it's revealed, you know, the Ugnaught is familiar with this bounty because, you know, many have came before. None has succeeded. He's like, I'm tired of the bloodshed in this valley. There's no peace. I just want peace, so I'm going to help you. And that's when he says, I have spoken, that you were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get a scene, which I didn't care for, but you get some Mandalorian history where he's trying to ride the blurg. And he's like, I can't do it. Just give me a speeder. He's like, you can't use a speeder. You have to use a blurg because of the terrain, which, to be honest, in the scenes, it didn't look – seems like he probably could have used a speeder for all I know.
Yeah, it almost looked a bit unnecessary, that scene, but almost like they were trying to kill time or buy time.
Yeah, and the only, you know, you get a brief, it's a line that the Ugnaught states where he's like, you can't ride this blurg, but your ancestors could ride the great mythosaur on Mandalore. So what the hell's going on here? You could tame this stupid animal.
Well, what I want to know is why does everybody want him to remove that helmet so bad? Because he even said like, well, maybe it'll be easier if you remove that helmet. And that's like the second time that I noted in this episode that somebody's trying to get him to remove that helmet.
Yeah, and this is where I'm a little fuzzy. Because in Clone Wars, you get a lot of Mandalorian stories. And in Rebels, you get a lot of Mandalorian stories. And there was no problem with taking off the helmet and, you know, seeing someone face to face and being a Mandalorian. But it seems like this new faction or this group or whatever that he's a part of, and I think it's the old ways of the Mandalorian before they embraced democracy, when they were just a warrior planet and a warrior culture, that you couldn't remove your mask. No one could see your face. I think there was a few exceptions. So the only time you could take off your helmet was with no one's around. And I think in the presence of your significant other.
Right. Well, I know from what you're talking about from the Clone Wars and the Mandalorian episodes, but I'm assuming the Great Purge happened after that. So I'm assuming that there's no more Mandalorians even that were left on that planet because everybody's surprised that they're even confined to Mandalorian. But weren't Mandalorians already extinct to begin with? And the people who lived there were just, you know, people who believed in that philosophy. I thought Mandalorians were already extinct.
No, I don't think they were extinct. I just think they were scarce. And, you know, in the Clone Wars, they were an isolated, you know, they were the Switzerland of the galaxy. They wouldn't take sides with the Republic or the Trade Federation. So they tried to stay out of the war. They just.
Well, I think that's going to be our homework for next week's episode is let's do some background on Mandalorian history.
Yeah, and I've done some, but you know, there's not a lot, and it's a little conflicting, and there's a lot to figure out because it seemed like you got one thing in Clone Wars and Rebels, but it seems like this new faction is going back to an old way of not removing their helmet. But like you said, research to be done, and we'll figure that one out. So let's let's talk about the rest of this episode, or the last scenes of this episode, when he finally arrives at where the mercenaries are keeping the bounty.
Mm-hmm.
And in this scene, he's scouting it out, seeing how he wants to attack. It's just a little village. There's like, it's in a semicircle or horseshoe shaped, where you have like two or three buildings on the sides and then a building or two in the center with like a fountain. And then in comes this IG unit, which, for those of you that don't know, it's just an assassin droid. Comes in, starts lighting the place up.
Yeah, that fucking assassin
like,
droid can shoot.
Fucking holy droid. Like, god damn it.
That droid can shoot, too. I mean, he was just knocking them out left and right. I mean, that droid, I did not know how good of a shot that these assassin droids could be. And that looked really fucking real. I mean, it actually looked like a droid. It didn't look like CGI. So they did a fucking great job with that.
And there's some scenes, like you said, where the CGI on the droid looks great, but when they're writing the blurgs, like him and the Ugnaught are coming in, it didn't look so great. So
yeah,
there's some scenes where the CGI is great and some where it's spotty.
Well, the blurgs kind of look like a giant chicken, to be 100% honest with you.
Yeah, I don't know what that was about, but
yeah. No, they look like the creature from Galaxy Quest. Remember they got turned inside out?
Oh, yeah.
That's what they kind of look like.
But after the IG unit starts coming to, or comes in and starts lighting the place up, Mando comes in and is like, hey, what the fuck you doing here? And then he gets shot by the IG unit. He's like, I'm on your side.
Yeah, I'm with the guild.
And then you get the, you know, because when Mando met the ex-Imperials or still Imperial people, Mando was under the impression that he was the only one on this assignment.
Mm-hmm.
But here's this IG unit, and he was like, I thought I was the only one on this assignment. And I was like, well, something's fishy is going on here, because now there's two of y'all on this assignment.
Right.
But they team up, and, you know, for a moment, you get some good humor there, because there's great moments where they're outnumbered. God, it has to be like 10 to 1, 15 to 1.
Oh, at least.
And the IG unit's like, oh, I gotta go into self-destruct mode. I can't be captured.
It appears we are trapped. I will initiate self-destruct sequencing.
Whoa, you're what?
Manufacturer's protocol dictates I cannot be captured. I must self-destruct.
Do not self-destruct.
So you get that good banter back and forth, which I, you know, I found funny, but in a very good way. Like, it didn't take you out of the episode. It was subtle humor.
Right. Subtle situational humor.
Yeah. But, of course, the pair prevail. They end up doing this awesome, like, this cannon comes in. They take over the cannon. And
he Spider-Man's the cannon.
Yeah, he Spider-Man's the cannon. Goes in a circle and just takes out everybody. And then uses the same cannon to take down this thick-ass door and go and find the bounty.
Now, did you notice that all the guards that were protecting him were the same species?
No, they were different.
Well, were they? I thought they were mostly looked like the same species.
No, because at first, when the IG first comes in, they all look the same. But once they're kind of cornered, and you kind of see some on the high ground, some kind of just on the ground, you kind of see that there's different species.
Well, now, here's what I'm curious about. Who hired them to protect the bounty? Or were they guarding the bounty? And if so, why?
Yeah, that was one of my questions. And unfortunately, I don't think we ever get an answer.
I don't either.
I know we don't in episode one, but I don't think it ever comes up in season one who these people are and why they were protecting the bounty.
Yeah, because they had a considerable amount of manpower and firepower to protecting the bounty.
Yeah.
Like, they dedicated a lot.
Yeah, and then, you know, Mando finds the bounty, and then, surprise, no one saw this coming, an infant.
Baby Yoda! Oh my god, it was fucking adorable.
Everyone calls it Baby Yoda, but we all know it's not Baby Yoda. It's just, you know, same species.
Same species, but it's Baby Yoda. Yeah.
For now.
Yes.
And then you find out that also IG was given a different mission, because he was told to just terminate the bounty on site.
Right. So since we were talking about that earlier, about, you know, the guy and the doctor who had the conflicting views on what they wanted to happen with the bounty, it almost seems like they sent, or the one guy sent the assassin droid to kill the baby to prevent them from being able to
bring him back alive.
Right.
Yeah. So we obviously know something's going on.
Yes. And then Mando, instead of letting the droid kill him, ends up shooting the droid in the head. And I'm like, that's the right call. That droid needed to die if he was going to try and kill Baby Yoda.
Yeah. And that's where you get the end of episode.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a freaking massive cliffhanger to leave it on. And, you know, for those of us who watched it, the premiere, and we're like, you have to wait a fucking week for the next episode? What the shit?
Right. Well, okay. What I was curious about is, who did you think they were going to set the bounty up to be when they said 50 years old?
I don't know. I just thought someone from the Rebellion, or someone who was a New Republic type official, maybe someone like Mon Mothma, or someone not big, like big enough to where you could recognize her name, like a Mon Mothma, Wedge Antilles, but not someone like Luke Skywalker or Princess Leia or Han Solo.
Right. Well, again, in the timeline, I thought this was between 3 and 4, not 6 and 7. So I was thinking, oh shit, could they be setting up like an Obi-Wan thing, 50 years old? It'd be just like, it'd be on the desert planet. Maybe it's Tatooine and he's trying to find a back way to get him. But then they kind of got all fucked up when I found out that the timeline's off, apparently.
Yep, way to go. Way to go.
Which, I'm curious, how are they going to do, oh man, what's her name? Ahsoka?
Ahsoka.
Yeah, how are they going to do Ahsoka in season 2? When, because they announced the actress for her, didn't they?
Yeah.
Oh man, what's her name? I can't remember what her name is.
Rosio Dawson.
Now she's relatively young, but in the timeline, Ahsoka.
She's in her 40s.
No, she can't be in her 40s because she becomes like a 20-year-old when she's like in her 20s when 3 happens.
No, I'm talking about the actresses in her 40s.
Oh, yeah. So she's in her 40s, but Ahsoka was 20 when 3 happened, and this is supposed to take place, you know, years after 6.
We're talking 25 years. Okay, between 3 and Mandalorian, we're talking, there's 19 years between New Hope and 3. There's roughly 3 or 4 years for all the original trilogy. It's 30 years, essentially, not give or take a couple of years, but it's 30 years after Revenge of the Sith from the start of Mandalorian. So, and Ahsoka was 16 or 17 in Clone Wars, so we're talking late 40s.
I guess that would work. I don't know. I just figured the timeline would be a bit more spread out. So I figured it would be closer to like 40 to 50 years after.
Nope. And the only thing I'm fuzzy on, and I know there's timelines out there somewhere, I just don't know them off the top of my head, it's 3 to 5 years for the original trilogy. So yeah, we're talking between 25 and 30 years between Revenge of the Sith and this show.
Oy vey. It's hard to keep track of all these timelines, especially when they're like, they're throwing each movie around in different spots of the timeline, and it kind of makes it confusing.
Yeah,
you know, Solo's in one part of the timeline, and then you got Rogue One's in a different part of the timeline, and then apparently this is in a completely different, and now they're going back to old school, Old Republic for the new trilogy. So it's like they're bouncing around a lot when it comes to timeline.
Let's go into our overall opinions. What did you think of the season and series premiere of The Mandalorian?
I mean, I fucking loved it. I mean, the first episode was great. I watched it like 3 or 4 times after it first came out, because like you said, that cliffhanger with Baby Yoda at the end, that was a fucking cock teaser to go from episode 1 to episode 2 and have to wait a week. So I thought the acting was great. I thought the makeup was great. I thought the CGI was great. You know, you mentioned that the gigantic chicken, what was it called, the club or the blurg, I'm sorry,
the blurg.
Yes, so the blurg, the CGI wasn't perfect, but you know, it's never going to be perfect, but CGI was great. Acting was great. Everything looked great. I mean, fucking 10 out of 10. I don't really have much that I thought was bad about this episode.
Yeah, and I feel the same way. I think the only gripe I have is it was only like 35 minutes long or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was like 39. I think it was just under 40
like,
minutes.
I think the runtime was 39, but it's 3 minutes of post-credit, or it's 3 minutes of credits.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was kind of short, but short, sweet, to the point.
But overall, great episode. Great start to the series. Looking forward to watching more.
Yeah.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it, kill it.
Punch it.
Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it, Hawk Knight.
Punch it. Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
Anyways, what do we got in store for next week's episode, brother?
So, next time on Deep Space High, we'll be continuing The Mandalorian, checking out episode 2, entitled The Child. That'll do it for this episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Deep Space High. Join us next time as we continue the discussion on The Mandalorian.
And don't forget to keep the conversation going on Twitter with hashtag Deep Space High.
And let us know how we're doing by reviewing Deep Space High on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you might find podcasts. And if you love what you hear, please feel free to subscribe and share our show. I'm Jedi Master Steven.
And I'm Scar Marshal Chris. And may the Force be with you.